So I'm going to start out tonight by reading a koan from the Blue Cliff Record, otherwise known as the Hekigan Roku. It's a collection of 100 koan, and this is number 50. And I'll just read the case. It's very brief and very simple, and then we'll go from there. So this is case number 50, and it's Umans, particle after particle samadhi. And I'll be defining these terms. So the main subject goes like this. A monk asked the Zen master Uman, "What is particle after particle samadhi?" Uman said, "Rice in the bowl, water in the pail." That's the koan. Now, this monk was interested in what is the most fundamental truth, I suppose, particle after particle. Not anything constructed of particles, no more complex structure, no complex idea, no complex substance, no chemical or fabric or anything. Particle. He said, what is particle after particle samadhi? Now, just to define samadhi, what we're doing here is a kind of meditation, and there are depths to this meditation. It can be very superficial. We can be kind of floating on the top of it and just barely keeping in contact with the object of meditation as thoughts and feelings pull us left and right, which is quite frequent. Everybody here knows what that feels like. At some point, your concentration can deepen and it can enter these states of really deep focus. It just happens naturally if you stay with it. You're very persistent. And you learn to embrace rather than struggle with the things coming through the mind and body, then you can begin to enter deeper states. Now, one of these states is called shamatha, which is a very wonderful, enlivening, energizing, peaceful, joyful state. It's temporary, but you'll from time to time touch into it. And you may go deeper than that. You may go into a state of real deep absorption. What I would call kind of the more superficial stages of a condition called samadhi. So this dhyana state, which is the very root of what Zen, the word Zen is. Zen came from the Sanskrit word dhyana. It was transliterated into Japanese as Zen, and it means absorption. A very deep state where there's no opposition. Everything is permitted, allowed. It just is there in the moment-to-moment awareness. And you begin to settle into the awareness. Now, when you go very deep into this dhyana, to the point where it is particle after particle, moment after moment, instant after instant, time stops. You can't say anything about this state. It's very pure. Now, you might say what it isn't. It has no color. It has no sound. It has no smell. It has no taste. It has no touch. No thoughts. It's profoundly present, profoundly awake. And it has a name, and the name is samadhi. And yes, all of us will from time to time touch into this state. It's not easy to get here. Partly because of the habit patterns of the mind and body that we develop in the so-called ordinary world, which is outside of our zazen, and we bring that mindset, that set of habit patterns into our zazen, it's hard to let it go completely. It's hard to let it go. So we begin to engage in comparison-mindedness. We begin to feel that the way our zazen is going right now is not the way it should be or the way I want it to be. It's too distracted. Or there's something on my mind, some terrible thing that happened, something someone said to me, something about myself, some deep memory, some deep trauma. Shouldn't be there. I got to get rid of it. I can't get into samadhi until I work that out, resolve it and let go of it and make it go away and evaporate. Which, unfortunately, if that's the mindset you bring to your zazen, will very likely not happen. Matter of fact, it's even less likely to happen as you struggle and fight with it, because you just get caught up in it, and one thought leads to another, and you're back in the old way of operating. So this practice is founded on a set of deep truths that a human being, 2,500 years ago the Buddha, happened upon through deep introspection, through this process of samadhi. And when he tried to express the essence of it, the very first way he put it in a teaching form, in what is called the Four Noble Truths, the first noble truth is so powerful, so liberating. It doesn't sound that way when you first hear it, but it is. And it's life is suffering, or the Sanskrit word is dukkha, meaning not just suffering, incomplete, imperfect from the standpoint of anyone looking at it from the outside. Painful, difficult. That's the way life is. Now, to really get that is to embrace life as it comes and no longer compare it to an idea of perfection. This is the great barrier to our practices, the idea of perfection. How perfect people are, how perfect people behave, how perfect situations are, how my life should be. Not the way it actually is right now in this moment. And that's the beginning of the disrupting effect of this ordinary mind state on our zazen, because we begin to make comparisons, templates. Then we oppose what's coming up right now, whatever thought, whatever feeling, whatever situation. So we can't quite give it space, we can't quite embrace it. But if you start with the knowledge that life is dukkha, you put down any idea that it ought to be something other than this. This human condition, this actual situation. Look what's going on. Just open your eyes. Look around you. Look at the way people treat each other. Look at what's happening in the world. Look at the insecurities of everyday life. People you love getting sick. People you love dying. Your body aging. All these things. How can I enter samadhi if I'm opposing these things, if I'm pushing them away, if I can't deal with them, if I can't wrap my arms around them? So the very first aspect of this practice that enables us to enter this samadhi is embracing things as they are. Now, embracing, as I've said in the past, is not liking it or wanting it, holding it. It's allowing it its moment in the sunshine of awareness. That's what embracing is. That's the profound truth of zazen, is learning to allow exactly the way things are, to be in the moment to moment, particle by particle, samadhi of your awareness. Just that. Now, when we do that, we can begin to see something deeper than just the surface of things. So, The Buddha said, life is dukkha. Now, what did he mean by life? I can't say exactly, I wasn't there, I wasn't in his mind and body, but I can only tell you how it works for me within my own practice, and maybe it won't be this way for you. Life is everything that takes any form. Anything that can be seen, heard, tasted, touched, thought about, felt, emoted. All these different things. These things that appear outside of an entity perceiving them. Something inside, I don't know what it is. Some knower. And these seem to be on the outside. So these things are never staying the same from 1 minute to the next. They're never matching up perfectly. They're never making me feel whole and complete in a permanent way. They may make me feel good for a while, but they're inevitably transient. And that brings about its own anxiety. When things are going great, I personally say, uh-oh, Paul, the worm is going to turn. When everything's just too perfect. And that's the way it is. That's the human condition. But when we can just allow this, if you want to give it one big word, life, all these unique moments of form and experience and thinking and feeling, if we can allow them in our awareness, allow, in a mindful awareness, we can begin to see something else about it, something else, something very basic, something very essential, something profoundly healing. What is that? Now in this koan it's called samadhi. But what is samadhi? What is its substance? What is its essence? Why would we want to know that? I don't know. Something about the human being, it wants to go all the way to the rock bottom. It wants to know what is really true. It's a strange thing about us human beings. We need to know that. Now, the ordinary way would be to look out at the world and try to figure it out, try to cut it, break it down to the tiniest unbreakable piece. I'm very excited about a movie that's going to be coming out soon about the discovery of the Higgs boson, otherwise known as the God particle. And the fervor, the excitement, the anticipation, almost unbearable, of these brilliant, brilliant scientists who want to find out, is there such a thing? There's a theory that it exists. It's so essential to this fundamental model of how the world is put together. If it isn't there, then we have to completely throw that model out. We have to change everything. Whether we find it or don't find it, the world will never be the same. And we found it. The world's largest scientific machine was built. It's called the Large Hadron Collider. It's some enormous ring, many, many miles around. It costs $14 billion plus. It required the efforts of thousands of people. If you see the intricacy of it, the size of it, the immensity, it is completely mind-blowing. And this movie will show you how this thing was built. But what's interesting is the effort put into it. The complexity of it. The commitment of all these thousands of scientists from different countries, all working together towards one goal, to find the God particle. Why? When you find it, it doesn't change anything. The God particle is still going to do what it does. Maybe you might be able to make a better handheld device after the spin-offs of whatever you learn, but is it really worth all of that? Why? Why put so many resources, put your whole life into it? And when you find it, the joy of that moment was absolutely amazing. You really could feel the excitement and joy of it, like men who first got out of the spaceship landing on the moon and took his first step. Just like that. This movie is going to be very exciting. But why? Because there's something deep in the human being that wants to find out something fundamental, not just constructed, not secondary, primary, essential. There's something. We want to find this out. Now, they found this particle. Now what? What's it made of? We know how it behaves. We know what it looks like in a cloud chamber. When you smash protons together at near the speed of light, you get all these incredible parts coming off, and then every 100 smashes, you see one little indication. It had to be the Higgs boson. It couldn't have been anything else. It was that accurate. Now you've found it, but what is it? What is it made of? What is its substance? Are these scientists wondering about that? Well, a Zen Buddhist does. We go even further. We totally respect what they do, but we go even further. That does not satisfy you. So there's a Higgs boson. So there are photons. So there are electrons. So what? What are these things? What are they made of? Do they stand outside me? Do they have a self-existence apart from me? This is the questions that we ask in our deep zazen. We look into the center of it. Now, when we allow the forms of the world as they are, including all these bosons, electrons, gluons, muons, all these particles that make up this fabric of reality, which includes our thoughts, our feelings, our situations, planets, cars, fans, incense smoke, all that stuff, all made up of these particles. When we can allow them, then we can begin to notice what they're made of, what their substance is. What is its substance? This is that samadhi. Samadhi. So the monk asked the master, what is particle by particle samadhi? What is it? And he answered this way. He said, rice in the bowl, water in the pail. Just this, every moment as it presents. What is rice in the bowl? What is water in the pail? If you split it down, all the way down to Higgs bosons, would that tell you what it is? Would you know then? Rice in the bowl is shining with something. It's emanating something. It's showing something in each moment, moment after moment. Water in the pail. The crunch of your feet on fresh snow. I heard some sounds yesterday on BBC Radio. They have a sound archive, and they basically have people send in sounds from around the world, and one of them was sounds of someone walking in snow in Minnesota last week. This incredible crunch, crunch, crunch. Emanating something. Why would anyone be interested in it? There's something about it, something deep about it. What is it emanating? What is its substance? Now, in the samadhi, you clearly see its substance. And at the same time, you see that it is your substance. It's one substance. Your deepest substance and the substance of the world are one substance. This is the meaning of samadhi. It's a very pure place. Now in our Zen practice, we go there from time to time. It's important. We turn the flashlight of the mind in on itself to see what its nature is. The interesting thing is, no one can tell you what that is. No one can describe it for you. No one can go there for you. It is the most intimate thing you can possibly do. Only you can go to that center. You are at that center. No one can go to your center for you. You must go there. When you go to your center and you see that, you begin to see it, then you open your eyes again, this world of form, and you see it shining from every single individual thing, just shining, emanating. In Zen, there's a beautiful saying, they call it the moon of truth. What is this moon? Why do they say moon? The moon shines, it illuminates things at night that were previously hidden and dark. You couldn't see them, and then the moon comes out and you can see things. But it's subtle. It's not glaring. It's there, it glows, it emanates. It's the very being of the world. That being of the world and your knowing the world are one substance. This is that particle by particle samadhi. I'm going to read a little poem that comes after this case. And this is a verse by one of the two compilers of this Hekigan Roku, this collection of Zen stories called Koan, K-O-A-N, and Secho. This is his verse. He goes, "Rice in the bowl, water in the pail. Even the most talkative can add nothing. The north and south stars do not change places. Heaven-touching waves arise on land. If you doubt, if you hesitate, though heir to millions, trouserless." This poem, it's kind of funny. "Rice in the bowl, water in the pail, exclamation mark. Nothing more need be said. It is fully exposed. There's nothing hidden, nothing mysterious. This is plainly there. This is your life. When you understand that life is dukkha, therefore I don't need to compare this situation to any, it is absolute. It had to be just like this right now. It's the product of all the causes and conditions. From the singularity, going by natural law, till this very center of the universe, where I am, at this very moment. I can let it be in the sunshine of my awareness. I can embrace it. And when I do, it's rice in the bowl, water in the pail. Just. The north and south stars do not change places. It's fundamental. This fundamental truth that's shining is absolute. It's like the North Star. It's always over the North Pole. It doesn't move. Heaven-touching waves arise on land, and here it is, on land, just waves coming up, waves of incense smoke, waves of emotion, waves of music, waves of joy, waves of sadness, waves of tears. This is our life. Waves coming up and touching the sky, constantly surging, all of the same substance, all made of the same essential substance. If you doubt, if you hesitate, so the minute you begin to ponder, analyze, compare, though heir to millions is a story of the prodigal son who was a multimillionaire. And when he went back home, he couldn't remember that he was actually the son of this multi-multi-millionaire. He was so poor, he had no trousers. He was an heir to millions, but he had no trousers. He didn't realize it. She didn't realize it. We don't realize how precious every moment of our lives is when we're engaged in the ordinary mind that compares and then fights and struggles, latches onto beliefs and ideas about the world rather than merely observe them. Now, as I've said before, we have to do that It's necessary for our survival. We can't be lumps in a log. We can't be munis walking in a daze in a perpetual samadhi. We have to enter the human world. We have to live it fully. We have to live it with a real wholeheartedness. And when we do that, and when we don't oppose, and when we're able to embrace, and we're able to see this commonality underlying things, a very natural connectedness arises. Very natural. You all feel this. It's the kindness you feel towards others. It's the compassion. You realize that we're not really separate. We seem to be, but we're not. We're all connected. We're all of the same substance. We're all of the same source. When I go to my deepest center, what I find there is the same. It's the same in an ant. It's the same in a Buddha. It's the same in a person. The same in a dog. When you see that, you'll never look at another sentient being the same way again. It won't be possible for you. So, let's continue with this beautiful process of going underneath, even deeper than the Higgs boson, to its very essence, its very substance, this particle by particle samadhi. Okay, we'll end there tonight.